Hello and welcome to a very special episode of The Laydown. My name is Ryan and today I am thrilled to share an interview I did with Jessica Chiarella. Jessica Chiarella is the author of the novel And Again, and her latest book is a crime thriller called The Lost Girls, which is out now. I had a great time chatting with Jessica. She's an absolute delight. She was also incredibly patient with me, as my normal recording area was under construction, so I ended up plopping down in the middle of the bookstore for our interview. If you listen very closely, you may hear some sounds of the bookstore in the background. But enough preamble, let's get into it. Please enjoy my interview with Jessica Chiarella. Hi, Jessica Chiarella, how are you?
I'm doing well, how are you?
I am so well. I'm so excited to talk to you. I just finished your new book, The Lost Girls. It is so good. I loved it so much.
Oh, that's the thing that every author wants to hear. Thank you so much.
Right? Yeah, no, I loved it. For our listeners, could you give like a little elevator pitch for it?
Sure. It is the story of Marty Reese. She's a podcaster whose older sister went missing when Marty was 8 years old. And she has essentially started this true crime podcast about her sister's case to try to drum up attention for it and new leads. And she gets a new lead from a woman named Ava Vreeland, who thinks that her sister's case might be connected to a wrongful conviction that, you know, Ava is trying to enlist Marty's help to solve. And it just sort of spirals out of control from there.
Yeah, it just goes from there.
Yes.
I loved it. I mean, I love a crime thriller. And of course I love podcasts. That was a really fun twist. I was like, ooh, it's like me.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like podcasts are so much fun and, you know, and people really gravitate towards them because they come with this sense of like, anyone can sort of tackle it. You know, there isn't like a huge barrier to entry. So that was what was really interesting for me going into this case, where it's like Marty doesn't have to be anything special to sort of take on, you know, the ability to investigate, you know, her sister's case. She's just a person. And that's what I think is so exciting about podcasting, is that you can just sort of dive in and just bring to it what you have. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that. I feel like there has been this trend, and I wonder if it maybe started with Serial, but there has been this trend of sort of like, on the ground, crime solving, like citizen crime solving. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that and how that kind of works in your book.
Yeah, you know, I think that is becoming increasingly popular because it does a couple of things. You know, it changes who has agency, like who is allowed to tell a story of a crime. You know, I feel like for so long we've just, you know, we've had journalism and we've had sort of the legal system, and the sense that most people have of crime is that it's indiscriminate and, you know, chaotic and horrible. And, you know, we get these 15-minute snippets on the nightly news of this person was kidnapped, this person was, and it's just, it feels like this crazy chaos. And the thing that I feel like people really gravitate towards with true crime is the sense of story, is the sense of, okay, this is a deep dive. This is multiple episodes looking at every aspect of this case. And, you know, it has a tremendous amount of empathy for the victims, and it, you know, goes into the stories of the people who are left behind, and it gives context to this, you know, what was really senseless, chaotic violence, and it really puts it within the structure of a narrative. And I feel like people really respond to that because it feels almost oddly comforting to be given the whole story and to feel like you're on a journey with someone who is diving into this. So that was like very, very interesting for me to explore. But the other thing about it is like, yeah, it's just that Marty is, you know, she just has her own personal story, you know, coming to this. So she's, you know, she gets to sort of take us on this journey, even though she herself, you know, doesn't have a plan, doesn't know where it's going. She's just diving in. And I think that's what's really exciting too, is that, you know, we get to go like sort of be led around by people who might not have an agenda or know where it's going. And that's very exciting for listeners and for readers.
Absolutely. And I love Marty also because she is flawed. She is, mm-hmm. She's a deeply flawed character. And I think that makes her very realistic to me, in that it's like, yeah, she's flawed. And also she's a pretty good investigator. And she like had this crazy thing happen in her life. And she is, you know, she's not just one thing. Mm-hmm. which I love. I love Marty.
Thank you. Yeah. She's a fun character to write for that reason. You know, there is something about a character who's sort of like working against the backdrop of this very intense trauma and survivor's guilt, you know, so the fact that that colors so much of, you know, what she does in the book and how she reacts to things and how she gets herself into trouble at times and makes poor choices and, you know, does all of these, you know, sort of questionable things. It makes it exciting, I think, to feel like, oh, this person is not, you know, working for the New York Times. Like, she is not a, you know, like a very extremely high functioning person. Like, we are on this ride with someone who, you know, might get herself into some trouble. So that, yeah, that was super fun to write.
Yeah. She's kind of a roller coaster of a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Did I read correctly that you wrote this in a very short amount of time?
Yes. Yeah. About 4 months I wrote the first draft, which was about the fastest I have ever worked. And it was a ride. I mean, the process was really interesting because I was working on this other novel after my MFA program and like really sort of toiling away and trying to make it perfect. And it was very far from perfect. And, you know, I'd gotten to such a, you know, I was so stuck with it that I was talking with a friend of mine, another writer. And I said, you know what, I would just love to write a thriller. Like, thrillers are what I go to when I want something fun that I can just sort of dive in. You know, it's like, I listen to a lot of true crime. I read a lot of thrillers. It just feels like fun and exciting and a diversion in a way. And so I thought, what if I just write one? You know, what if I give it a go? And so because he's an incredibly generous writer, he's like sat down with me in dive bars over the course of a couple of months and just helped me plot out the entire thing. And so I had this structure that I was working within that I was like, all right, I know what the events of the case are going to be. I know where the twists are going to be. But then I started writing and Marty just came to me, and it was so, so much fun and so exciting to be able to just write this sort of off the rails character within this structure of this plot that I had created, and just see what she was going to do and see how she was going to react to these events that I had plotted out. And it just came in a rush and just was a very, very fun, bizarre writing experience. I mean, I think I set my record for like words written in a day. I think it was 7,000 or something like extremely dumb like that. It was just a crazy number.
That's amazing. Do you think you'll sort of stick to thrillers from now on, or do you think you'll bounce around a little bit?
You know, I've always got a couple of projects going at once. So, you know, I definitely have an idea for a new thriller and, you know, have it kind of plotted out and feel like, okay, I'm going to dive in. But, you know, I'm also constantly working on, right now, my thesis that I had started in my MFA program, which is sort of a little bit more magical realism, speculative fiction, which was always my wheelhouse. Like, this thriller was really a departure for me. So yeah, you know, I'm always sort of working. I like bouncing around. I really read very diversely. So I feel like there's something interesting about sort of tackling different genres and, like, you know, analyzing them to see what the rules are of each kind of structure and then just kind of diving in and seeing if I can do it. So yeah, definitely another thriller, probably still working in speculative. Maybe, you know, I'll try something new at some point. I'm just trying to go where my interest takes me.
Totally. No, don't box yourself in. I love it. Write everything. Because you're right. Yeah. It's like readers read diversely. And so it's really fun when you have an author that you find that you like, and then they write diversely. They write different types of things. Yeah. That's really fun. I like
that. Well, you know, and I think the thing for writers too, is that there's so much that can be learned from writing in a different genre than you're used to. You know, I had never considered the reader as much as when I was writing The Lost Girls. You know, it's sort of, as a writer, you're sort of always taught to, you know, treat the work as if it's your own before you turn it over to a reader. And for me, you know, because I was plotting this thriller, I was constantly thinking, okay, am I giving this away? Is someone going to stay engaged? How can I keep them turning the page? And that really taught me a lot of tricks to sort of narrative propulsion that I can then bring back to my other work and think, okay, is this, you know, like, can I make this move more? Can I raise the stakes? Can I, you know, like, all of the things that I learned from writing a thriller, I can now apply to other genres as well. So I think there's only a benefit of sort of writing, you know, different types of books.
Absolutely. I'm always so impressed when an author manages to have a twist that I don't see coming. I'm like, how did you do that? How did you do that? Because then of course you go back and you're like, yes, there were clues, of course. But it's like, I'm very easily impressed when it comes to twists. I'm like, I don't know how you did that and made me like fall for this red herring. And now I'm completely baffled and it's amazing.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah, no. And that was, you know, that's always the high stakes moment where you're just like, is the twist gonna land? And I feel like, yeah. I mean, for me, the platonic ideal of a thriller will always be Gone Girl, just because that twist is just like, it hits you right in the face.
So
it's
good.
Just beautiful. Yeah. And so that, you know, like if I can shoot for that, even if I land somewhere pretty far down from that, I feel like I'm still doing okay, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think Gone Girl is a good standard to set yourself by.
Absolutely the standard. I feel like for any thriller writer out there, I feel like everyone's like, and then there's Gone Girl, just does, like executes everything on every level, which is just so good.
Oh, it's amazing. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about sort of the way media can just impact a cold case, whether positive or negative, just sort of like that idea of media kind of like jumping in and affecting things.
Yeah, I think the thing that we're seeing from so many true crime series and all these podcasts is that the attention of the public really does change the behavior, you know, within the criminal justice system. It is fascinating to see the ways in which some of these series have actually changed outcomes. You know, it's like the one that always springs to mind first for me is The Jinx, you know, with Robert Durst and how his case was impacted hugely by that series. And that's what made it so compelling. And I feel like that feels like it raises the stakes of these true crime podcasts and these true crime series, because there's always the sense that maybe they'll uncover something that will have an impact. But you know, the thing that tends to be true more often than not, you know, even when we see a case like Serial, where at the end, you know, Sarah Koenig is like, I don't know, you know, like, there were a lot of details that were sort of investigated, but nothing really brand new, you know, came out of, well, subsequently, there were, you know, some new interviews and stuff that happened. But, you know, there wasn't like, we uncovered the definitive evidence that proves beyond a reasonable doubt that, you know, this is true or this is true. But more often than not, it's not even that changes that impacts the case. It's the attention. It's the fact that you're getting a bunch of eyeballs onto this case that, you know, suddenly feels like it's very significant in our cultural conversation. And that really changes the way that people within the criminal justice system respond. So I think it really feels like more and more these investigations have real life consequences simply by virtue of the fact that people are paying attention. And I think that really teaches us a lot about how to use our attention and the cases that might not get the kind of attention that they need. And the way that, you know, different communities, I mean, I in The Lost Girls, the missing sister is from a very wealthy, privileged family, and so gets a lot of attention, at, you know, probably to the detriment of people who did not have those privileges, who, you know, went missing simultaneously. And so, you know, I feel like as viewers and consumers of media, it's important for us to also consider how our attention can be used as a tool within the criminal justice system as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember at one point, Marty is talking about sort of the second season of their podcast, and it's like she doesn't want to stray away from her sister's case, but she's also like, I remember seeing other cases that just didn't get any airtime, and she's like, is it fair for me to focus on this one when there are so many others that just don't get anything?
Yeah. And she's so hamstrung sort of by her own trauma. Like she can't let it go.
Right.
Yes. And I feel like that is a source of a lot of guilt for her. So she's got, you know, survivor's guilt from sort of being the person who, you know, didn't, you know, she was with her sister at, right. when her sister went missing and, mm-hmm. you know, her sister got into this car and told her to run away. And she's got yeah. this tremendous amount of survivor's guilt, but she also does have this guilt of thinking, if I keep the focus of this podcast on my sister, it means that we are not looking at these other cases, that we are not, you know, giving attention to, you know, other women, other girls. And it, you know, that does feel weighty. And it feels like, yeah, as, you know, as consumers of media, we really have to, you know, use our attention as a tool and, you know, be yeah. responsible about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And really sort of pay attention to like, who are we paying attention to?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah. why? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What kind of research did you do for this novel? Did you research podcasts? Did you research the criminal justice system? Like where, what did you have to do to prepare for this one?
Yeah, it was interesting because, a lot, you know, I did a lot of research. I ended up doing a lot, but most of it was after the fact. You know, I had listened to a ton of true crime podcasts and watched a lot of series just because I'm kind of a fan, you know, and
yeah, yeah.
so I had that sort of basis of knowledge up front, but then, you know, once I had written this, you know, this crazy fast first draft, I sort of had to make a lot of notes going through it of like, I just assumed that this was how this works. I should really check to make sure that's true. So yeah. I did a lot of research into podcasting. I've got friends who, you know, I've got friends who run a podcast production company out in LA and they were really cool. helpful. And then I've got a couple of friends who just have like their own podcast in their kitchen. So I had you know, sort of this, you know, both ends of the podcasting spectrum that I was able to sort of be like, okay, you know, what does it look like when you're just doing sort of the rough and tumble, like in a back bedroom? And then what is the equipment that is necessary to like actually do a professional podcast? And I wanted Marty and her, you know, producing friend, Andrea, to sort of be in the middle of that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I did a lot of research into the criminal justice system in terms of like, would the police in the mid 90s think maybe she just ran away? Like maybe the sister was just a runaway because, you know, she was a teenager and she, you know, broke the rules and, you know, sometimes, you know, not responsible and maybe she's just a run. And, you know, I just wanted to make sure that that was a reaction that the police might've had. It turns out, yes, that was very common.
yep.
So, and then, you know, my uncle is a retired cop. And so, you know, I just sat down with him and just sort of went over the ins and outs of police procedure and, you know, got, you know, tried to get the details right. Like at one point, I remember being like, would a cop ever take notes using pencil? And he was like, oh no, absolutely not. Never. It's like the first thing you're taught in the police academy, always use pen, nothing that can be erased. And I had to sort of change details as a result of that. And then there were just a lot of, you know, notes of him where I was like, so would a cop ever do this? And he'd be like, no, no, no. And I would be like, well, I kind of need my cop to do that. So, you know, so there were just a lot of times where I was like, I need to know the rules before I can break them. But yeah, I did end up doing a lot of research. It was just sort of fact checking things that I had kind of made assumptions about. And, you know, some of it I had to tweak a little bit after the fact.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I wouldn't have even, things like that wouldn't have even crossed my mind, like the pencil versus pen. It makes so much sense, of course.
Of course, of course. And it's, yeah, it's one of those things where I was just like, as I was reading over, I was like, I should just double check it. Cause you know, it's just something got erased from a police file.
Right.
And I was like, ah, maybe that raised a red flag for me. I'm
yeah.
sure there are 50 other details that I didn't think to check that I might've gotten right or wrong, but you know, I wanted the consequential stuff at least
yeah.
to be on point with that.
Yeah, no, for sure. I also just there's a scene in a bar that was very like reading it and, you know, I'm sure you know exactly the one I'm mm-hmm. talking about, but initially it's very sort of like, oh gosh, every woman and femme presenting person that I know has dealt with this. And then it's so cathartic. Like, I love the, I love that Marty is a feminist and she is like, she's a badass
mm-hmm.
as well as being very feminine and very like, she makes some poor decisions with
yes,
her life,
yes.
but she's also like, that doesn't mean I'm asking for it.
Yeah.
I love, definitely. Yeah, that bar scene was very interesting to read. I was like, oh, thank yeah, no, been there.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was one of those things that sort of came out of trying to really get into that headspace of, okay, if you were 8 years old when your sister went missing, what are the ways in which you will live differently from, you know, I guess, you know, the typical experience of women and femme presenting people? You know, it's just like, what would you do differently? And I, you know, the first thing I thought was, oh, she would definitely take some sort of self-defense. Like she would feel like, okay, I need to be able to, you know, in at the crisis moment, be able to do something to defend myself. And so that was kind of where that bar scene came out of. And I also, and this, you know, refers to later in the book, but I wanted my main character not to be helpless, even in situations yeah. where she chooses maybe not to reach into her bag of tricks and use the skills that she has. You know, I wanted there to be a choice there where she, you know, isn't, you know, she can handle herself a bit. And, you know, so she's getting into more dangerous situations because she feels like she can handle it, and mm-hmm. maybe she can and maybe she cannot. So right. I think that was an interesting sort of balance to play with, and sort of, an, you know, what does it mean to have someone who has been, who is so aware of her own vulnerability and yet yeah. tries so much to battle it and to feel like she's capable and she has agency and, you know, she can handle herself. It was yeah. interesting. So I'm glad that scene worked.
Yeah, that scene worked super well. I was like, yep, this is awesome. And her reaction to, so basically for listeners who haven't read it, she's at a bar and a drunk cop, you know, does the, I'm flirting. Oh, you're not flirting back? Well, now you're the worst and I'm going to get nasty with you. And yeah. she doesn't take it. Yeah. And I loved it because it is one of those situations where, like, in real life, you're sort of like, okay, I'm just going to like quietly take this and then make my leave. But she's like, no, yeah. I know my capabilities, and you're not going to do that again.
Yeah. And I feel like at that point, she's just in a position where she's just so angry. I mean, she's yeah. got so much anger, and you see it sort of flare up at different times. And this, at this point, it's just like, no, she's just too angry. She can't not react. And, yeah. you know, so it's like all of her impulses are still, you know, coming from this place of deep pain and feeling like there's this great unfairness in the world. And sometimes, you know, I wanted there to be this balance of sort of like emotional endurance and also, you know, this sort of physicality to her where she's just like, she's just so angry that sometimes it comes out in interesting ways, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think that is what I have for you. I know that you have a very busy day today, so I will let you go. But thank you so much for chatting with me. Congratulations on your new book. Yes. It's out now. Yay!
Thank you so much for having me on. This has been great. I've loved talking with you about it.
Thank you so much, and good luck with the rest of your virtual tour.
I appreciate it. Have a really good day.
Thanks, you too. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you again to Jessica Chiarella for chatting with me. The Lost Girls is available now. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website is gibsonsbookstore.com, and we're also on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and we'll put those links in the show notes along with all of the books that were mentioned during this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks. Bye!